tram services with strike timetables varying from city to city. The strike coincided with the super long weekend of April 25th, or Liberation Day, a time when tourists flock to Italian cities. Confile Faisa said that the nationwide strike is in protest over a number of issues ranging from job security and better working conditions to safety in the workplace.
Decades of wild privatization policies and budget cuts due to austerity measures have resulted in an overall precarization of the labor market. Workers' rights have been eroded, with severe consequences on wage security and living conditions.
The public transport sector, together with the health sector, has been the number one victim of budget cuts by consecutive governments under the pretext of promoting efficiency in the public administration. This strategy has not worked, as the current little public funding of private transport groups has to include a profit for the group itself. Thousands of bus drivers have been bearing the brunt for this enormous budget downsize. They work more hours for less money. A bus driver earns roughly 1,600 euros a month, but half of their pay goes into house rent or loan repayments.
And then there is the economic crisis that is plaguing Italy. Italians are grappling with serious economic hardships. The cost of living due to high inflation and high energy prices is biting hard in Italy, with an increasing number of families struggling to make ends meet. At the end of 2023, the number of people living in absolute poverty rose to almost 6 million, about 10% of the population, its highest level in about a decade. This, as about 6 more million Italians live in a state of relative poverty.
Our institutions are covering up the reality of the situation. All prices have been dramatically going up since the start of the war in Ukraine. The cost of fuel and that of tomatoes, vegetables, have gone up big time. What have not gone up is salaries and wages for the vast majority of the population.
Earlier this week, the European Parliament adopted a reform of the EU's rules for national debt and deficits. Some analysts have slammed these new rules, saying that they will once again impose a fiscal straitjacket on member states' national budgets, promoting short-term thinking and not safeguarding public investment in social welfare. Max Civili, Turin.
As Iran marks the anniversary of the failed U.S. military operation in the central Tapas Desert, people in the country say the Sands were the agents of God. A memorial ceremony was held in the capital, Tehran, with the event highlighting the budged American operation in which U.S. choppers crashed in the desert.
On April 24, 1980, the U.S. military carried out a cover operation in Iran by the order of President Jim Carter. The operation, dubbed Eagle's Claw, failed due to major sandstorms in the central Tapas Desert. The failed operation resulted in the death of American soldiers. Iranians believe the sands were the agents of God.
The botched American mission was an attempt to release 52 staff of the U.S. Embassy, known as the Den of Espionage, who had been held after the 1979 Islamic Revolution.
The incident of Tabas was a helping hand from the Almighty God to defend the great nation of Iran. And also the late founder of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini, said the sands were appointed by God. Even the sand rose in support of the Iranian nation. And that bitter incident happened to the American regime.
Unlike the previous years, this year's memorial isn't just a history lesson. It is also an opportunity to reflect on Iran's recent anti-Israel retaliatory attack, dubbed Operation True Promise, which showed the true power of Iran's military forces. Since the failed U.S. Operation Eagle Claw, Iran has boosted and upgraded its defense capabilities and can now stand up to all kinds of threats.
And civilians will not hesitate to retaliate from our own land. The True Promise operation was executed in a specific manner which is classified right now. We use scores of drones, crews, and ballistic missiles with proper timing to successfully penetrate the complicated Israeli air defense systems and strike our targets with pinpoint accuracy.
Iran has shown that threats from its enemies have only strengthened its will to defend what belongs to the nation. And now, it seems that the West has woken up to Iran's military powers after Operation True Promise.
Reza Hashemi, Tehran.
recent United Nations report predicts that approximately 16 million individuals in Afghanistan will be struggling to gain access to food this year. To get a better understanding of the situation, we visited a family in Kabul facing acute food shortages. The Rukhsana family's daily struggle mirrors the difficulties faced by countless households across the country.
I lost my husband during the war in our hometown. I don't have a male provider, and I can't find a source of income. One of my grandkids polishes boots, but that is not enough for our family. It has been a long time since the last time we had rice and potatoes in our home. We barely eat two meals a day, which is stale breads and tea. My children are asking for soup, and I feel so bad as I can't make it for them.
Our situation here is so difficult that we can hardly survive. It is because there is no income or food to eat. If we eat during the day, we should sleep with empty stomachs at night. There are people who skip meals to feed their children. Some families beg for food but fail to find some because almost no one has a better situation. We used to receive some aid from the United Nations World Food Program, but now it is gone and has left people to their fate.
According to the UN report, the Afghan population cannot fulfill essential needs, including health care, food, employment, and shelter. Some local experts argue that the current hardships faced by Afghans stem from prolonged foreign interventions and conflicts, suggesting that those involved bear a responsibility to aid in the crisis resolution.
I think all the misery and economic hardships that Afghans are going through today stem from the shameful U.S.-West intervention and wars in Afghanistan. If they had let us build constructive economic relations with our neighbors, we would not be so broken today. The U.S. and its allies are responsible because they came and destroyed our infrastructure here, and on the other hand, they imposed economic sanctions after their withdrawal. Today, they cannot turn a blind eye on what they have created.
As the international community's attention shifts away from Afghanistan and the foreign aid continues to shrink, the Afghan people still hope for a means of survival that will pull them back from the edge of crisis. Emergency levels of food insecurity and malnutrition. The UN agencies warn that the situation is expected to worsen rapidly if urgent action are not taken by the global community. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Dozens of organizations marched in Paris against Islamophobia and racism as Israel's attempted genocide and ethnic cleansing has caused increased state-sponsored repression against Europe's largest Muslim community. A main theme of the march was protecting children. Since October 7th, children as young as 10 years old have been charged with so-called apology for terrorism, while a child of 8 was falsely targeted for praying during recess. Scandals like those have many saying that non-white children are no longer being treated like children, but instead like suspected fanatics, delinquents, and full-grown adults.
We Muslims are enduring so much Islamophobia these days, and it's not like there wasn't a lot of Islamophobia in France already. The targeting of our children is a step too far, and it's incredible that they have taken this shameful step.
As France is accused of targeting Muslim children at home, their elite are giving military and political cover to Israel's mass murder in Gaza of an estimated 15,000 children and the orphaning of some 20,000 others.
On les bombarde.
It's totally unjust how we are watching murder, torture, and the We're here to say stop the violence against Palestinian and Iranian people.
A decade ago, during another Israeli invasion of Gaza, France became the first country to ever ban pro-Palestinian demonstrations. They banned pro-Palestinian demonstrations for a month after the counterattack by Hamas on October 7th, handing out hundreds of thousands of euros in fines and making mass arrests. Police initially banned this march, claiming it was a threat to public order and possibly anti-Semitic. That was overturned at the last moment, but many say the effort is proof of a long-running double standard against non-whites and non-Jews.
C'est des antisémites. Ça, c'est n'importe quoi.
Anytime there is a march about Palestine or Islamophobia, the interior minister in whatever administration seeks to ban it. The idea that we are anti-Semitic is total nonsense. I get the feeling that I'm more French than many others who aren't of Algerian descent, as I am, because many have totally abandoned the longtime values of French political culture.
Similar to during France's two-year state of emergency, starting in November 2015, many have been shocked by the lack of outcry at this latest targeting of the Muslim community, despite perpetual bragging of being the alleged birthplace of human rights. Rami Mazahiri, Paris.
After almost 3 days, the Israeli forces withdrew from the refugee camp of Nur Shams near the city of Tul Karim in northern occupied West Bank. Only then paramedics were able to evacuate the martyrs' bodies and the families were able to count their dead. Over a dozen Palestinians have been killed since Thursday, but the number might be higher as reports suggest that Israeli forces have more martyrs. On Sunday, a comprehensive general strike was declared across the occupied West Bank to mourn Tul Karim martyrs. Scores of Palestinians also held a protest in the center of Ramallah against Israel's escalation and violence in Tul Karim and Nur Shams refugee camp.
Israel is expanding its genocide into the West Bank as well. And as we said before, there is no safe place for any Palestinian. And there has to be immediate Palestinian unity to stand up to this terrible aggression. And there has to be international boycott, divestment, sanctions campaign worldwide. And there has to be condemnation.
It's obvious that the Palestinian people, leadership and factions have to declare an immediate comprehensive popular uprising all over the Palestinian territories until the Israeli occupation ends. The ongoing war of attrition is no longer useful, but what's necessary is a national popular uprising.
The Israeli invasion has caused some of the worst destruction in the West Bank in decades. The occupation forces destroyed infrastructure, including sewage lines, shops, homes, and vehicles. Homes were turned into interrogation centers, and dozens of Palestinians were arrested. According to locals, heavy exchange of fire and clashes took place between resistance fighters and Israeli soldiers during the operation. The Israeli military admitted that at least 9 of its soldiers were wounded.
The Israeli occupation regime is escalating its violence against the Palestinian people. Its crimes are meant to exterminate the Palestinian people. In Gaza, genocide is being committed, and here in the West Bank, there are daily incursions, murders, collective punishment, and destruction everywhere. The Israeli occupation is doing its utmost to either bring Palestinians to their knees or commit more aggression and crimes against them.
Sunday's general strike paralyzed all aspects of life in the West Bank, with shops, schools, universities, and banks shuttered. But Palestinians question whether such a standstill is enough, expressing fear that once the Israeli military is done with Gaza, the occupied West Bank could be next. The Israeli military's violence against Palestinians is aimed at countering resistance, people here say. This is part of the Israeli crackdown on armed groups in the occupied West Bank. However, Palestinians say the Israeli crimes, including in the Nur Shams refugee camp, have failed to weaken their determination. Mona Kandil, occupied Ramallah.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who allowed none to witness when He created the heavens and the earth, and who took no helper when He authored the spirits. He has no associate in divinity and no support in unity. Tongues fall silent before the limits of describing Him. Intellects fail before the core of knowing Him. Terrors fall low in awe of Him. Faces are humbled in fear of Him. And everything mighty yields to His mightiness. So to Thee belongs praise again and again, well measured, continually, and methodically. And may His blessings be upon His messenger endlessly, and His salutation everlastingly, eternally. O Allah, make the beginning of this day of mine righteousness, its middle prosperity, and its end success. I seek refuge in Thee from a day whose beginning is fright, and whose middle is anxiety, and whose end is pain. O Allah, I pray forgiveness from Thee for every vow I have vowed, and every promise I have promised, and every pledge I have pledged, then failed to keep for Thee. I ask Thee concerning the complaints of Thy servants against me. If there is a servant from among Thy servants, of a handmaid from among Thy handmaids, who has against me a complaint, because I have wronged him in respect to himself, his reputation, his property, his wife or his child, or because evil words I have spoken about him in his absence, an imposition upon him through inclination, caprice, scorn, zeal, false show, bigotry, whether he be absent or present, alive or dead, such that my hand has fallen short and my capacity has been too narrow to make restitution to him or to annul my obligation to him, I ask Thee, O He who owns all objects of need which are granted by His will and hastened to His desire, that Thou blessest Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, peace be upon them, and makest the one I have wronged satisfied with me in the manner that Thou willst, and givest me mercy from Thee. Forgiveness decreases Thee not, and giving injuries Thee not. O most merciful of the merciful, give me on every Monday two favors from Thee: the facility to obey Thee at its beginning, and the favor of Thy forgiveness at its end. O He who is Allah, and none other than whom grants forgiveness for sins.
From Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marcia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. It has been more than 10 days now that students at Columbia University, New York, pitched tents and started their encampment to support Palestinians and to condemn the genocide by the Zionist regime in Gaza. The students are also demanding that their university divest from Israeli companies and entities. What started at Columbia has now spread to protests across the United States and beyond. What is it about Palestine which is galvanizing young people to stand up and say to their government, enough is enough? Well, stay with me as we look at that and a lot more on this Spotlight. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Out of Manchester, Sarah Trusdale, human rights activist. And out of Moscow, Ali Salam, editor-in-chief of Basir Press. Thank you both for being with me. Let's start it off in Manchester. And Sarah, why do you think the genocide taking place in Gaza has ignited this type of reaction from especially university students, starting off in the United States and now, of course, spreading to Europe?
Thank you for having me. I think it's because we've all been watching it for 204 days now, being live streamed to our phones, watching hospitals. 15,000 children have been murdered, 35,000 at least innocent men, women and children. They've obliterated, they've dropped the equivalent of 2 nuclear bombs on the Gaza Strip. I saw a report that said it's going to take 14 years for them to remove all the rubble. And we're all watching this, and the reason I think it's ignited it is because we all expected by this point, any sane person expected by this point, that it would have stopped, and it hasn't stopped. And instead of it stopping, we're getting, the gentleman, the guy from the State Department standing there and saying, we're going to let Israel investigate their own war crimes. And I think it's just got to the point now where something was going to give. And obviously what happened at Columbia, I think, has just, it's ignited what everyone was feeling anyway. I think everyone was waiting for someone to do something, and the Columbia thing, I think, has set the domino, knocked the dominoes over and set it all off, really.
Okay, well, these students, whether in the U.S. or Europe, can be expelled from their universities, are basically blacklisted when it comes to getting good jobs, so they are risking a lot. Why do you think they still choose to fight on behalf of the Palestinian cause?
We have to put ourselves in the shoes of students and young people in the United States. The situation you described, well, if they don't do anything, they don't really have a good situation financially or otherwise anyway. So it's as if they have nothing to lose. The average prospects of a young person to even have a dream of owning a house or owning property is totally out of reach for most people. It used to not be the case. It used to be the case that people could even graduate with a high school diploma and be able to have a one-income household and live pretty comfortably. They can buy a house. They can have more time with their families. Now people can't even have even two jobs and afford some of the basic things of life. For example, even in the high schools, because they would teach people useful career skills and they would become certified plumbers and electricians out of high school. Now they go into college and now they don't have any job prospects, because the bankers really robbed everybody blind. So they have this feeling of resilience. They have this feeling of there's nothing to lose. And when they see their tax dollars going to support a genocidal regime, instead of alleviating the economic situations and other negative conditions within the United States that might actually give them some hope for the future, well, why shouldn't they put themselves at risk? Because it's not like their situation is going to be good anyway. So there's a spirit of this is the end of the road, and there needs to be a change in the United States, and there's also beyond their own self-interest, obviously there's the issue of conscience as well, that they've been programmed to think that Arabs and Muslims and Palestinians are subhuman. Finally, that kind of smokescreen over their hearts, the natural inclination towards goodness that God has put in everybody's heart, is starting to shine through. So I think there's a lot of positivity here.
Well, Sarah, what started out as condemning the ongoing genocide of Palestinians, students have now transcended into also seeing the role of their government, the role that their government is playing in this genocide,
and are demanding that it stops. So let's talk about that side of things. Do you think that the students can actually put enough pressure on their governments to change at least this unwavering support for the Zionist regime?
I hope so. Like we say, so I saw an article and someone said it's not, you know, it's not a small thing that's happening. It's big universities like Harvard, Princeton, Columbia, places like that. It's the children of the elite, as they said. So it's children that usually, not children, young people that usually would, like you say, it's never happened before like this. It's never been where there's so much anger. And as Ali just said, there's nothing really to lose at this point. So I think, yeah, I think hopefully they can pressure the government, because these students are the future of that country. They're going to be voting. And I don't know at this point how America can't change course, with the fact that, I mean, a large majority of America now, young and old, against the government policies. And if they carry on, I mean, the way they're treating the students are rising up. If you're a middle-aged person, you're watching your child be thrown to the ground in, I mean, the police state that's exposed itself in America. So I think they can, if the the pressure keeps up. They've got to keep the pressure up, because everything's got to be. It's like when the World Kitchen people were murdered and everyone got dead angry for a couple of days and then it all went away again. I mean, this has got to be sustained now. And I think it's sort of like Ali said, in America now, you haven't got anything to lose. You've got a future where you can't afford to live, blah, blah. So, yeah, I definitely do think they can, because they've got nothing to lose. So,
okay, well, Ali, are you surprised at the way the U.S. police have cracked down on these students and professors as well?
Absolutely not. The police in America are basically trained to think of the people as like an enemy, as an enemy force. The one thing that many people don't like to talk about, and this is a controversial thing to talk about, is that the police of America belong to a Freemasonic fraternity called the Fraternal Order of Police. There's obviously many police who have a degree of racial supremacism against different groups of people in America, but even those who don't, they have a sort of, if they belong to the secret society, they have another maybe type of philosophical, that they're these enlightened beings, and you know, God, man is God, and the so-called enlightened among men have the right to treat other human beings as a vengeful God would treat. So they don't view themselves as servants of the people. If you look at, you know, for example, in the Islamic Republic of Iran, you'll see police officers helping people to change their tires, or if anybody's in a bad situation, they'll be helpful. And the U.S. is shoot first and ask questions later. They even, you know, have abused autistic children in the past, and this is very painful for myself as I have autistic family members. So this is just a mask-off moment. The police don't do anything about the criminal drug gangs that run the streets of the United States, because they're part of it. The CIA and the Zionist Mafia are part of the criminal drug network. They don't do anything about child trafficking rings, because there's huge amounts of child trafficking among the elites of the United States, as well as the Zionist lobby like Jeffrey Epstein and everything like that. So they only target people who oppose this very sick and satanic system for doing practically nothing. These kids just have tents. They oppose no one, but you see their snipers on the roof. And they have the audacity to then turn around and tell Iran or Russia that they're, you know, bad for cracking down upon violent riots, which are funded by foreign NGOs and foreign intelligence agencies. Or for example, they'll give a very reductionist and kind of anarchistic argument that, well, okay, all types of crackdowns are bad. The crackdowns in the United States are bad, and the crackdowns in Iran are bad. Well, the difference is between truth and falsehood. Let's not get the moral relativism mixed up with this. The students in America are standing for the truth, and they're doing so nonviolently. In Iran, or for example in Russia, they're standing for falsehood. They want to get rid of sovereign governments, and they're funded by nefarious foreign governments, and they're using violence. So the governments of those countries have the right to use crackdowns to stop these kind of foreign-funded agitations. So I hope that the mask has been ripped off of the American police state. And that doesn't mean we should abolish police, because, you know, obviously as a Muslim, as, you know, people even in the Islamic Republic of Iran, we believe in laws and orders, but the issue is that people should have rights. The people should be viewed as people. The problem is is the relationship between the police and the people in the United States. It's an antagonistic relationship, which is very toxic and abusive.
Well, Sarah, Ali talked about snipers being on roofs. We've seen pictures of that. Interestingly enough, it's said that I was also Ohio State University. And, of course, in Ohio, 54 years ago at Kent State, we had, of course, Vietnam protests and students being killed by police. I mean, one would think that we would learn from history. And it just seems that it is repeating itself. They've come down with this violent crackdown. I mean, do you think that this is going to backfire and it's just going to increase the number of protests that we're seeing?
Very, very definitely I do think it's going to backfire. The difference is, I saw an interview with a lady from the 70s who was at Kent University a few years ago, and she said, you know, they killed Dr. King, they killed JFK, and then they killed kids at Kent State, and it was like a bullet to the brain of the American psyche. We basically got the message of, if you stand up, we will shoot you down, basically. But now we live in an age where everything's like, you'll notice, I saw the head of philosophy get thrown to the floor and arrested, and these people shouting, what's your name, who can we contact? And we live in the age of the internet now, so in Kent State it was like happening, but them getting reported, I was like, now everything's being live streamed. You'll notice the minute anything like that starts, people get the phones out. The police were trying to arrest people doing peaceful prayer last night, and all the students, the friends surrounded him and said, let them pray, let them pray. The students at New York pushed the police off the campus. I think we all realise now, because we live in the age of the internet, that whether you come from Russia, Palestine, America, the UK, we are all human beings. We are all connected. As Dr. King said, you know, everything is connected. And whereas when they used to be able to control the narrative and be like, oh, we've got these few agitators and we've managed to calm them down, now everyone can see that the news is, you're being gaslit by the mainstream media. The State Department head is going out and saying, you know, we're not sure if there's been war crimes, when we've all watched the war crimes happen on our phone. So yeah, I think basically I think it's lit a flame now, and I don't think there's any going back. The whole world has woken up. People that I used to speak to about Palestine and used to get very twitchy, you know, like, oh, it's anti-Semitic to talk about that. And I've always said, well, no, it's not, because Zionism isn't Judaism. But even that, those people now saying to me, and they'll talk to you more, and they're not, because it's got to the point where everyone, the occupation has exposed itself to the world. Everyone has seen what's happened, and everyone's seen that the way our governments are backing that. So I don't think there's any putting the genie back in the bottle. I think I think that's it now. I think everyone's woken up, and hopefully it will lead to some sort of change.
What about that, Ali? Because one thing we seem to be seeing is this type of unity amongst the students, and it transcends color of skin or class, ethnicity, religion, whatever, you know, you want to say. Because, of course, we know that in general, one of the key techniques of empire is to divide and conquer. And the situation that has happened in Gaza, the Palestinian issue, has been one that has united people from all over the world. Do you think that what we're seeing in the United States on the campus is symbolic of what is happening elsewhere, and also symbolic of possibilities if people become aware of the reality of what the hegemonic forces have been doing and continue to do?
Unity is a very powerful force, and this is something that is, I believe, scares the Zionists and the American regime the most about these things, is because not only race or ethnicity or religion or these other things, but political spectrum, because they want to try to paint the issue of Palestine as solely an issue of the left. But now we see various different political spectrums. I mean, I personally believe the left-right spectrum is a fake construct anyways. But people who are supposedly on the left and people who are supposedly on the right coming out in force against this genocide, because the Zionists in the U.S. used to primarily rely on the right-wing Republican neoconservative types who are generally pro-Likud, pro-Netanyahu, They've lost a lot of the rights. So what's left is maybe just maybe some older people who are from the previous generation who were subjected to that brainwashing. But the young people are not, this is not working on them. So who is their political bloc to support all their corrupted politicians going forward in both the Republican and the Democratic Party? It looks pretty bleak to them. So I think the unity factor here is very important. It brings people out from all walks of life. And also, I think it's bringing surprised me and impressed me the most is the presence of independent political groups and voices who are pro who are in support of the Islamic resistance acts, who aren't afraid to say the name Hamas and Hezbollah and have the picture of the commander of Izzeddin Qassem brigades and everything like that in there is. And it's based off of this slogan that I saw on one of the tents in the one of these protests is, if you are in solidarity with our corpses but not our rockets, you are a hypocrite and not from among us. So I'm glad that this type of mentality is peeking its head out into kind of hopefully taking the lead and establishing its, because every movement needs a leader. Hopefully they win, because if not, there's lots of corruption and contamination within the movement, from foundation money like George Soros and the Ford Foundation. They're trying to steer this away to make themselves seem like the hero rather than being in complementary to the valiant and brave efforts of the resistance in Palestine and Lebanon, in Iraq and in Iran. So I think this is a huge that all the billions and billions of dollars that these foundation money spends is going to be washed away, because they spend this money in order to delegitimize armed resistance. So there's going to be some to see solidarity between people in the West and with resistance factions is going to be something very beautiful that breaks down all the propaganda we've been seeing for decades.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting times, Ali. You've brought up an interesting point, because of course we know that the, as you said, talking about Hezbollah or talking about Hamas or Iran has been so demonized in these Western countries that people dared not even mention them or didn't even really want to talk to people who were mentioning it. And what about that, Sarah? Are we seeing a total change? Has Washington's reputation now been destroyed to the point of no return? As very few people believe now that the country really stands for freedom of speech or democracy or protection of women, children, human rights. I mean, do you think that we are seeing a total change in the narrative?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if anyone's heard it, but there's something circulating social media, and it's a leaked conversation with the Zionists, and they're saying it's terrifying, but this is the reason they're trying to ban TikTok. It's terrifying. He said the division in people who are pro-Zionist and who are anti-Zionist in America isn't left or right anymore. It's the young and the old. And the way the direct quote of the guy says, the number of young people who think Hamas's attack on October the 7th was justified is terrifyingly high. We have a serious TikTok problem. Now, that's, again, like why they're trying to ban TikTok, because they've always been able to control the narrative. Because if you watch the news now, you watch any of the mainstream media in any of the Western countries, as you said yourself, you can't mention the amount of people I've said to about Hamas. And this, I say, under international law, Hamas are entitled to armed self-defense. That's international law. So people realize that they've been being lied to. The narrative has been controlled for so long, but there's no way to control that anymore. The mainstream media is not reporting what's going on. It's still being referred to as a war, when one side has got billions of dollars worth of weapons, has obliterated the Gaza Strip, and the other side is millions of people. Everyone's looking and going, we're being gaslit on an industrial scale. I saw a gentleman who did a TikTok, and he said, I'm starting to question everything the government's ever told me. So, yeah, I think the narrative has changed, and I don't think there's any going back now. I don't know if anyone saw it, but there was a Zionist woman who went into a crowd at one of the universities, and she's wearing a T-shirt saying, I am a Jew. And her husband's filming her. And no one pays her any attention. No one could care. Like we said before, UNITA, people have realised that whether you look the same as me or not, whether you worship the same God or not, we're all just human beings. We all just want to live in peace. And the majority of people just want to live in peace.
Right.
The Western countries have made it so that that's not even possible now. Like Ali was saying, we can't afford anything. So they've kind of pushed everyone to the point where it's like, you've got nothing left worth living, like fighting, like basically you may as well fight us. And Palestine has ignited that and changed the narrative because we've seen how much we've all been lied to for so many years.
Right, right. Well, I mean, while we're looking at the States and Europe and the college students and joining in protests, Rafah is still under threat of an invasion with more people being killed there today and heavy equipment standing on the edge simply waiting to go in. Though these protests are important, do you think that it's very, very important, though, that we stay focused and definitely continue to focus on the reason why these students are protesting to begin with, and that is the continued genocide in Gaza? Because if we look at the mainstream media now, we see on the one hand they are covering the protests and trying to put it in an anti-Semitic category, and then not really talking about the genocide, the reason why these students were out there to begin with.
The reason that they're protesting should be what's being focused on. But the mainstream media, the Zionist media, is not going to tell the truth about this issue. And at the same time, we should also be realistic that what's going to liberate Palestine is the resistance axis. Okay, it's not all these other tactics must be in complement to resistance. And any of these other liberal Zionist forces that are trying to co-opt the Palestine struggle to delegitimize resistance should be, you know, called out and condemned and separated, because they're only going to harm the movement. What I fear the most is that the U.S. government, and this is the direction that they might be moving to. Many other people say that this is the case, but they're going to perhaps get rid of Netanyahu and try to establish a sort of fake two-state solution where the Zionists still get to keep part of the land they stole. A puppet government will be installed over Palestine, similar to the Palestinian Authority, which arrests and kills many Palestinian people, including the martyr of truth, Shahid Nizar Banat, rahmatullah alayh, who was killed for his outspokenness against this comprador regime led by Mahmoud Abbas. They'll do the same thing for Gaza as well, because currently Gaza is the only independent Palestinian government. There's a story in the life of Imam Ali,
I have 20 seconds, Ali. Go ahead, 20 seconds.
Sure. We shouldn't be fooled by the tricks of the enemy. Like when Muawiyah raises the Quran at the time of Imam Ali to fool the people, the Muawiyah of today will raise the Palestinian flag and pretend to be pro-Palestine and pretend to want to end this war, but in a way that humiliates the Palestinian people and gives them a puppet government. We should be very, very careful about that.
Okay, and on that note, thank you both for being with me. Sarah Trousdale, human rights activist out of Manchester. Ali Salam, editor-in-chief Basir Press out of Moscow. And thank you for being with us on this Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing out for myself and other group right here in Tehran. Goodbye.
From east to west, throughout the vast land of Iran, you're listening to IRIB English Radio. In the limelight.
In the United States, police have arrested many Google employees after technology giant's officers in New York City and in Sunnyvale, California. After employees staged an hours-long sit-in in protest against the company's recent billion-dollar deal with the Israeli regime. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The website Axios has covered this story and tells us more. Google has fired about 20 more employees over recent protests against the deal between the US technology giant and the Israeli regime. The activist group No Tech for Apartheid said on Monday, 22nd of April, that the new layoffs bring to more than 50 the total number of Google workers dismissed in recent days. Jane Chung, a spokesperson for the No Technology for Apartheid, said, "The corporation is attempting to quash dissent, silence its workers, and reassert its power over them." Meanwhile, a Google spokesperson confirmed the company had sacked more employees after continuing its investigation into the 16th of April anti-Israel demonstrations, which included sit-ins at offices in New York City and at Sunnyvale in California. The protesters held posters reading, "No more genocide for profit, no cloud apartheid, we stand with Palestinian, Arab and Muslim Googlers, and don't be evil, stop retaliation." They denounced Project Nimbus, a $1.2 billion contract awarded to Google and Amazon to supply the Israeli regime with cloud computing services. The contract dates back to 2021. However, the protests followed a recent report in Time magazine citing an internal company document that the Israeli Ministry of War is a Google Cloud customer. No Technology for Apartheid Group said the report showed that Google had built custom tools for the Israeli Ministry of War and had doubled down on contracting with the regime's army after the genocidal war on the Gaza Strip began. Israel waged this brutal war on the besieged Gaza Strip on 7th of October last year after the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas carried out a historic operation against the usurping entity in retaliation for the Israeli regime's intensified atrocities against the Palestinians. The Tel Aviv regime has so far massacred tens of thousands of innocent Palestinians, many of them women and children. Since the start of the onslaught on Gaza, the United States, Israel's most dedicated ally, has fast-tracked arms shipments to the occupying regime and blocked United Nations resolutions that condemn Israel. The American newspaper The Washington Post has also covered the same story and tells us more. Police have arrested 9 Google employees at the technology giant's offices in New York City and at Sunnyvale, California, after they staged an hours-long sit-in in protest against the company's recent billion-dollar deal with the Israeli regime. The protesters entered the offices recently, demanding that Google drop the $1.2 billion contract that provides Israel with cloud and machine learning services, known as Project Nimbus. The employees who participated in the sit-ins wore shirts that said, "Drop Project Nimbus," as they held a banner reading, "No Technology for Genocide." No Technology for Apartheid Group, which organized the protest, said the protesters sat in the office of Google Cloud Chief Executive Thomas Kurian in Sunnyvale, California, and remained there for about 10 hours. The New York protests occupied a common area on the 10th floor of Google's Chelsea location. A video taken by one of the protesters and shared with the Washington Post showed they were given the opportunity to leave voluntarily, and then arrested by police officers after refusing to do so. Bailey Thompson, a Google spokesperson, said, "Physically impeding other employees' work and preventing them from accessing our facilities is a clear violation of our policies, and we will investigate and take action." She added, "These employees were put on administrative leave, and their access to our system was cut. After refusing multiple requests to leave the premises, law enforcement was engaged to remove them to ensure office safety." Google workers had previously staged rallies in front of the company's offices in various U.S. cities, demanding an end to its cooperation with the Israeli regime. Back in March, Google fired an employee who staged a protest against the technology giant's cooperation with Israel in its war against Palestinians of the Gaza Strip. The Google employee, who has identified himself as a cloud software engineer, stood up during an event in New York City, disrupting the speech of the managing director of Google Israel, Barak Regev. He denounced Google for being complicit in the Israeli regime's months-long genocidal war against the Palestinians of Gaza. Under a $1.2 billion Nimbus contract, Google Cloud Platform and Amazon Web Services were selected to provide Israeli agencies with cloud computing services, including artificial intelligence tools and machine learning. Google workers are raising concerns about the misuse of the company's artificial intelligence and cloud computing tools for surveillance, for military targeting, and weaponization. No Technology for Apartheid has censured Google and Amazon for playing a role in the genocidal attacks on Gaza by partnering with the Israeli regime in the billion-dollar agreement. The organization demands that companies immediately cancel Project Nimbus and end their complicity in Israel's war crimes in Gaza. Current and former Google workers also say that they are fearful of speaking up internally against Project Nimbus or in support of the Palestinians because of what some describe as fear of retaliation. This comes as the contract terms reportedly prohibit Google and Amazon from blocking specific entities, such as the Israeli military, using their services and ending the contract in response to public pressure. However, the movement seems to be gaining momentum amid international call for ending support to the Israeli regime that could be used against the Palestinian people. Recently, Eddie Hatfield, a 23-year-old Google Cloud software engineer, stood up at Mind the Tech, an annual conference promoting the Israeli technology industry, shouting, "I'm a Google Cloud software engineer and I refuse to build technology that powers genocide, apartheid, and surveillance." He was supported by the anti-Zionist Israeli group Shoresh and Jewish Voices for Peace. Zelda Montes, a YouTube software engineer of No Technology for Apartheid, says, "We're not going to stop. I can say definitely that this is not something that is just going to die down. It's only going to grow stronger."
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Israel has intensified strikes on the southern Gaza city of Rafah, killed over a dozen civilians as the death toll from the regime's genocide tops 34,450. A senior Hamas official stresses that the movement is serious about reaching an agreement on a ceasefire deal in Gaza, but will not yield to any U.S. pressure. And the Iranian president says heavy-handed crackdown on anti-Zionist student protests in Western universities reveals the true nature of Western civilization. Thank you for joining us. Israel has launched fresh air and artillery strikes on various areas of the Gaza Strip, where the situation is nothing less than an absolute catastrophe. Over a dozen people were killed in the attacks targeting several houses in the southern city of Rafah. Elsewhere in the south, 13 bodies were recovered from under the rubble in Khan Yunis. To the center, an Israeli air raid on a vehicle killed a civilian and injured two others in the Nusayrat refugee camp. Gaza City also witnessed fresh bombardment, which left a number of civilians dead. According to Gaza's health ministry, 66 Palestinians have been killed in Gaza in the past 24 hours. Israel launched this genocide in Gaza on October the 7th. The death toll now stands at over 34,450, but the number of casualties are said to be much higher as thousands remain trapped under the rubble. More Israeli soldiers have reportedly been killed in